You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. So we just hit 800 with our good friend John McPhee. I had Ben Skutnik for 801, and now I'm sitting here with Mr. Arash Sofiani.
Sofiani.
I'm sorry, I butchered it on the beginning. I should know it after all these years.
In Portuguese, it means shitty brown belt.
I was very impressed by your Portuguese yesterday when working with a non-English speaker, young Brazilian coming in into the training room, and hearing you parrot phrases that I've heard before was hilarious. So like your ability to speak Portuguese is just a collection of phrases that you parroted over the years.
Calma. Mais baixo, postura.
Dude, and you do a really good job of stringing them together, the accent, like the like that you did for Shanji. It's great.
Yeah, I'm very poor at the conjugation of the verbs, but like you give me the conjugation, I'll parrot it.
Yeah, so listening to Rush speak Portuguese is great, and then the look on Philippe's face was even better. Like he was like slightly confused but also impressed. It was good.
Yeah. That's where I live. I live in the confusion. you go to Brazil though. That's the thing though. Is the guys look like me in Brazil too. Yeah. Right? You just can't put a finger out. You could look Brazilian. I mean, I think the only kind of person that doesn't look really Brazilian is like a northern white dude, like a like a Scandinavian kind of looks out of place there, but everybody else is kind of
Whenever I think like who's it, Oliver Anthony, that guy that sang that that song like Richmond, North of Richmond. Mm. You know who that is? He's like he's like a country guy. It was pretty big there for a couple of years.
Okay,
and I always look and think that dude would never pass as a Brazilian.
No gingers in Brazil. I don't think there might be.
There could be a ginger Brazilian
for sure.
There's got to be somebody floating around.
Everything's in Brazil, dude.
Well, if you look at the history of Brazil, it was fascinating. The Portuguese came over and they gave all the land to all the rich landowners. And then they just traveled around the world and stole slaves and then just deposited them in Brazil.
Yeah.
And didn't give anybody direction and just let everybody just basically go to ham.
Yeah.
And that's why you get an interesting melting pot. You know, if you go in the north, I mean, when we were in Salvador, the different combinations of people, it looked like you took like a whole bunch of Mr. Potato Heads and just started moving the features around.
Yeah.
You're like, man, there's a black girl with blonde curly hair and blue eyes. And then there'd be a white girl that had, you know, black girl features and like kinky hair. Like it was, it was kind of confusing. And my buddy, when I like the host that was taking us around, I asked him, and in Portuguese, he said it, and then they translated. He's like, this is what happens when you put a bunch of people together and let them just fuck for hundreds of years. He said it much more eloquent, but that was how they translated it to me. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think the interesting thing about Brazil too, is that it seems like all roads have already crossed there. Like, did you know the guy who, yeah, this is contested, but the dude who first developed the airplane, they're not the Wright brothers. It was this dude in Brazil.
I had heard that. I think Victor tried to tell me that.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things.
There was also a U.S. city that was built there around rubber. So Manaus was considered one of the richest cities in the world. And I think like Goodyear Tires went there and built an American city in the Amazon jungle and got people to move there. And they were going to try to like colonize this part of Brazil around the Amazon because this is where they made all the rubber tires.
Man, this is why I want Shanji here right now, because he'd be like, no, it was not Goodyear. It was another company, but it was American company. Da, da, da. Like, I would want him here. He's like he's a secret historian.
He is. Well, as we were discussing Manaus, because my recommendation for Victor's bachelor party was that we go to Manaus. Right. When we see Shanji City, we get on boats and we go fishing in the Amazon to catch an arapaima.
Yeah. I don't know.
And so as I've told him this, he keeps arguing with me. He's like, no. The Arapaima are too far away. You have to, you know, like he knows exactly where
their spawning grounds are.
He's like, oh, we would have to take a boat 3 days. And the problem is the boats, like you guys are too big. We would need too many boats. And he was like giving me all this stuff. And I'm like, I need a can-do attitude. I don't need a can't-do attitude.
I don't know what I'm more impressed with, the plans that you're trying to make or the fact that you pronounce his name correctly. Shunji.
Yeah, I know how to pronounce Shunji. Yeah,
you said Shunji very perfectly.
Oh, well, really? It'll take me a little bit, but the hilarious part was when I was filming a little video for John McPhee, and he was like, Sanji. And I stopped him, and I'm like, we have to reshoot this. Like, you need to say his name right. And like, I could see, like, you know, Shunji, like, and I'm like, I was at an event where somebody purposely mispronounced his name. And I had to listen to him fume. I mean, it's one of his pet peeves is when they mispronounce his name. So if that bothers somebody, then you have to do your best to try to, like,
I appreciate the precision.
Yeah.
I appreciate the precision. Yeah. Today I have a question to ask you to start it off.
Well, I got a few questions for you too. So you start first.
Do you want to? Okay. So the big one I have for you is, I train with a number of different people, but this question actually came from my very good friend, Jeff Mandeville, who you've trained with and we love. And
also the commissioner for Keshito's baseball league.
By the way, he's just
the best dude.
The best dude and the best kids coach you could ever ask for.
Dude, he showed up on Wednesday to watch Cash pitch. And he was sitting there right there cheering him on the whole time. And then I like looked at him and he like turned around and was like, oh, I didn't see you there.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, first of all, how did you not see me? And two, the fact that you just randomly showed up. He's like, I saw Cash was pitching.
Yeah.
So I showed up to support him. He's got a big heart. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you pushing through performance roadblocks caused by pain or janky movement mechanics? Knock the rust off with our movement health courses, used by thousands of athletes worldwide, from average Joes to MVPs. Our courses give you the tools to assess and fix yourself so you can get back to breaking necks and cashing checks. Not convinced? Get a taste of how our courses can help you by enrolling in a free sample today. Head to powerathletehq.com and search courses from the menu. Now back to the show.
It makes me want to be a good, better person, you know, every time I'm around him. But he was asking me about, you know, men in their 50s and training and, you know, where they could expect themselves to be or where do they want to be well into their 50s. And he's got a ton of friends that want to start training, maybe even try jiu-jitsu, and they don't really know where the marker should be for where their fitness should be. What it is that they should be attacking in terms of their diet, and, you know, the frequency of their training, because, you know, my friend Mandy, used to be a high school football player and was from the old pictures was like a really buff dude, and he's still very, very strong.
Yeah, no, he's strong.
He's still very, very strong, but I guess he wants to know, you know, what are some things that somebody in his age can expect to do or can do to get into some better shape and maybe shed the belly and also, I don't know, what are some good expectations for him? Somebody like him.
Well, what I think is so important is you need something to train for. You know, I mean, there was an old question I used to ask people at the CrossFit football seminar. The original tagline for Power Athlete was, what are you training for? Mm-hmm. And then the branding guys came in and said, your tagline can't be a question. And I'm like, 100% it can be a question. Because if you can tell me what you're training for or what's important to you, which is really the translation of what are you training for, then we can design training to kind of work backwards. And so for Mandy at what's he, 56?
56.
56. So for him, he has found this new love of jiu-jitsu. He's training kids, which I think is a great opportunity for him. But he wants to be more proficient at what he's doing. And unfortunately, his physical being, like his shape and kind of what he's allowed himself to get into, because you showed me pictures, he used to be in shape. So the question I always ask these guys, and maybe this is, I told you, I had a bunch of consults yesterday, and I ended up talking to a pretty switched on dude that, you know, wants to, you know, ramp us up his performance, much like we did for Bill Bradley many years ago. So we kind of hatched a little bit of a plan, and I realized there's probably a greater opportunity for this for people like Mandy and other guys who are at this kind of interesting crossroads where they don't know how to kind of move back the hands of time. And the first question I always ask, you know, guys like Mandy is like, when did you kind of give up? Like when did this happen? Did it happen slowly? Was there a moment, you know, was there something significant in your life where you just kind of said, hey, and it, you know, like you said, it could be stay at home with the kids or some other thing where now all of a sudden they've kind of lost their identity a little bit. This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. And I think where he's at is he's in a situation where he's trying to reclaim his identity and he's trying to go back a little bit. And I don't think that's a midlife crisis at all. I think 100% that's how you should live your fucking life. Right.
Self-examination.
Like, yeah. Like, well, I mean, the idea that The Rock can be in the best shape of his life in his 50s.
Yeah.
Like, fuck, like, why can't we all do that? Right. Like, not only do we not probably have access to a private chef, but every pharmaceutical on the planet and like, you know, getting ready for movie roles, yeah. Like whatever it is, who gives a shit? The Rock looks like a fucking $1 million and he's fucking jacked.
Billion, really?
Yeah. He looks like $1 billion.
Yeah.
So, you know, but also think about his upbringing, you know, played football, like look at his dad, he's got the genetics, physical culture, like everything about him. And so what's wild is I met The Rock in like 99, 2000. He used to come in, actually 2001. He used to come and train with us because Tom Canavy, who was our assistant strength coach, was also a strength coach in Miami. So whenever those guys would come to town for the WWEF or whatever the fuck it was at that point, those guys always came and banged weights with us. So The Rock used to come and train. And he was not that physically impressive. Super cool, fucking big heart, funny guy. Like you could see he had, you could understand his locker room camaraderie. And I remember him making a joke about, you know, he backed up Warren Sapp. And, you know, I made a career out of fucking stomping his fucking head in. So that was kind of a funny, funny kind of interaction. But he ended up giving us tickets many times and I got a good chance to go see him wrestle. Seeing his physical transformation in his 40s was fucking impressive. You know, I mean, nobody's going to say that guy's not the hardest worker in the room. You know, his whole life has been about physical culture. And so now all of a sudden here's Mandy at 56 and he's in a situation where, you know, I mean, jiu-jitsu is a physical culture thing. I mean, you're in there physically grappling and a lot of the movement patterns, are kind of, I guess you could say beyond what he can do based upon just his shape. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens a lot of times is guys gain extra weight. It's not as if they're continuing to stretch and move and do this. So as they gain the weight, they still have it. So he's probably, you know, gotten tight. He hasn't trained, you know, aerobic capacity is an issue. And so we'd have to look and say, all right, when was the moment at which you gave up? And then we'd have to start there and do a little bit of soul searching and being like, okay, like that was you in the past, but every day step forward, the best version of you is on that horizon. Mm-hmm. Like you never want to look in the back and be like, I'll just give you an example. Somebody asked a question on the team feed about close grip bench, why I like close grip bench. So I have a whole series of videos that we like, I realized they were like 9-10 years ago when we were still out in Costa Mesa, Little Power Athlete in the industrial park. And we were doing different versions of bench. So we used to bench with the camber bar, the 18-inch camber bar. And so there's a position you get to your hands, which is a close grip, and you bring it down. You can't go any wider. Bamboo bar, we still do close grips. So all of those kind of trick cambered bars, bamboo bars, any of the specialty bars we used, favored that close grip. I used close grips in the NFL because I felt that it was had greater carryover towards my punch, greater carryover towards dips, bigger triceps. It was also a safer movement. And I felt it had more carryover for me being able to punch people. So I just close gripped. And So when I came over and started working and doing CrossFit football and Power Athlete, I've always kept close grips in there. One, because I've never seen anybody fuck their pec up. I've seen a lot of pec injuries, a lot of, especially when people come down, bounce and shitty range of motion in their elbows. Like even if you use Mark Bell's slingshot, for example, you know, when you put it on and you kind of widen a little bit, it kind of naturally pulls you into a more close grip, but it teaches you to tuck elbows.
Yeah.
So I feel better prescribing close grips. Now, if you don't want a fucking close grip, I'm not going to come to your house and do a dojo storm and fucking beat you up in your garage gym because you're not doing one thumb length off of the smooth. Also, for me, a close grip is one thumb length off of the smooth. For other people, that might be a fucking wide bench. Mm-hmm. But if you also watch me bench, I go here, I go, you know, like pinky on the rings and kind of move it around. So we went back and I posted some of those old videos. And I was like, fuck, dude. And the funny one is one of the videos was from when we did the original 22 Jack Street, which was the program that ended up becoming Jack Street, which is our biggest program. And I was like, man, like we were fucking dieting. I was doing all my aerobic work. I was lifting weights. Like I was doing everything that I should to try to win this contest. And like, it's kind of interesting when I was looking at it and I was like, you know what? It wasn't that much more work than what I do today. It just had a greater degree of like the margin of error was very, very small. Like all the meals were timed. I prepped everything, but I also had two kids and my kids were extremely young. So it was easier to do. And now all of a sudden we're in a situation with carpools. And you know, I'm dealing with two 13-year-old girls and, you know, my son's type one. I mean, it's like, there's a lot more complexity in this world than what I had. Mm. So, it's really easy to say, oh, my life's more complicated. I don't have enough time. Yeah. But I think as an adult, you have to carve out a certain amount of time for yourself or you're going to fucking go the way of the dodo. You're just going to kill yourself. You're going to get out of shape with this. So I carve out, like for me, it's about 2 hours a day, whether it's, you know, in the gym for, you know, 70 minutes like we did yesterday, 30 minutes on the bike and then some recovery thing. I try to get 2 hours to myself every day. Now it might not be 2 hours continuous. It might be broken up over the day, but there's those non-negotiable times. Mm-hmm. And if nothing can wait, then you know what, it might be a little bit later or I might have to get up a little bit earlier. Yeah. But I feel what happens as a parent, as you get older, you just start basically like, almost like putting yourself second. And then all of a sudden you're 56 and you're not happy with how you are. You decide to go jujitsu and you can't play guard. You can't do this because of the lives that you've made. So what we'd have to do with Mandy is we'd have to hit a reboot. Mm-hmm. We'd have to sit down and be like, when was the moment at which you kind of decided, like when you came down this road, and we'd have to start at that point, fix what that is about him. And kind of like do a little bit of soul searching. I'm not talking about sitting around in a prayer circle or, you know, singing fucking Kumbaya, you know, or going off and contacting the, you know, the ancestors with ayahuasca.
Yeah.
But like sitting around and being like, all right, like,
what are we training for?
Yeah. What are we training for? Like, what was that moment and how do we go back and fix that? And then going forward, how are we going to gauge progress? How are we going to gauge this? And what are you going to do to be able to, you know, meet this goal? And do you have the people around you to be, you know, hold you accountable? This is not a attack on women in any way, but I always feel that it's very hard for a woman to keep a man accountable with that type of stuff. Mm. The one thing which is important, I think men need other men and guys and like, you know, like a group, they need a circle. And it's a very different circle than women. Women are very supportive. Men are actually like, we talk shit.
Yeah.
Right. So like, I know that like, you guys are my friends. If you guys fucking torch me a little bit, if you don't, I'm always like, what's wrong with these guys?
Yeah.
Like my brother and I, like, I love him to death, but all we do is fuck with each other.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the marker. Like I tell people, like, if somebody's mean to you or talks a little shit, that means they like you.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. And you can't, and if you're get butt hurt by that, and some guys do, cause they either didn't grow up with brothers or they didn't grow up in that environment. Like I talk shit to Cash, my son, constantly. Yeah. And I told him the other day something, or he was messing with me. And so I basically like was like grabbed him by the face and he went down on the ground at a Tractor Supply and I was tickling him and he got up and like right hooked me square in the crotch. And I was like, you know what, when you're 18, I'm going to get even with you. And but like that's like good camaraderie.
Unafraid of confrontation, yeah. I would say. And I don't think, like you said, it's hard to say about it for all women because there are some very supportive women. And maybe it's a more rare, but in general, they don't want to confront us on what, because they don't want to make us upset, right? But well, whereas you're not afraid of making me upset at the benefit of my life, right?
Well,
you're trying to help me out.
And at the end of the day,
it might hurt.
I believe that the best version of you is in there.
No.
And unfortunately, you know, like it's very difficult to kind of like, you know, hammer away that, you know, that facade. Like think about like a big block of marble, right? And the best version's in you. Like I have to take a hammer and chisel, and you have to chisel that stuff off. Like there's a crucible for that thing. Like, can you imagine, you know, mastering jiu-jitsu without ever really being smashed on the bottom for like 5 minutes and just getting absolutely mauled?
Yeah, no, there has to be a moment where you're like, I don't want this to happen anymore. Yeah.
And then you make a 180 degree decision. And so not everybody has the intrinsic power to do that. And so they need the power of community. They need the power of like friendship and brothers and being like, hey, dude, we're going to hold you to a standard. You're not going to be happy about this, but we're also not going to let you fucking fail. No. And we're not going to let you fucking peel out. And like they're, you know, I always told people too, especially at the gym, like the only way this doesn't happen is if you stop deciding to come here. I'm not going to get in the car and come to your house. Yeah. If you show up, I'm going to give you. So as long as you keep coming, I'm going to keep giving you what you need.
Something that Mandy does really well is I see it with all the kids, especially when the kids get defeated because like they got mounted 8 times that practice or whatever. They'll have their head low, and then like Mandy will give them something. Hey, you did that. You know, I really like the way that you did that one move. You got a single leg today, and you know what? I bet you could get out of the mount. I believe in you. And he looks at the kids right in their eyes and says, I believe in you. And some kids just really need to hear that.
Yeah.
And then maybe at the beginning, it doesn't come from them, but eventually you're like, you're starting a fire inside of the person. And it works with adults too. Well, it worked with you to me. So.
Well, maybe he's saying it because he needs to hear it himself.
Surely.
You know, he needs somebody to hold him accountable. And it's like, you know what? You did something good, but you would be so much better. You know, thinking a little bit like, you know, with like, for some reason, the algorithm has been pushing, obviously, a lot of jiu-jitsu towards me. But I keep getting these Gordon Ryan, Victor Hugo 2002 ADCC videos where they're, you know, I don't know if you remember that one. I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
But they keep showing these different passes and different movements of Gordon. And they're like, you know, when she says perfection, she means Gordon Ryan against Victor Hugo ADCC 22, that like they were talking about his perfect passing. Mm. And what's interesting is, you know, Gordon ended up doing well and getting points and beating Victor on points, but didn't submit him. And for some reason, the only thing that I keep seeing is Victor Hugo in that thing. And every time I watch it, I always think to myself, man, I wish Gordon would get healthy so that Victor could go against him, because I know the Victor who walked in right after ADCC and you guys got 2 rounds on the bike and couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And thinking to myself, like, imagine when we give him like the gift of like fitness and athleticism and strength and all these other things, these guys are not going to know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, seeing what happened with him and, you know, Nicky Rod at that UFC fight pass.
Ain't nobody done that to Nicky Rod.
No. I mean, like one, he couldn't pass his guard. And then, you know, he goes for the
Uchimata.
And, you know, ends up being great. I mean, and, you know, 270 pound gorilla lands on you.
Mashallah.
Yeah. And just basically, I've been in the bottom of that octopus when he just fucking, he's got long arms and legs and he pinned the arm. I mean, it was great. It was textbook, but like that's the Victor Hugo. And to see, you know, him in 2022 and to have all these people talking about it, which was Gordon's peak.
Yeah.
But Victor Hugo's still peaking. So it's, but you know what? Like these things happen. And I think for a guy like Mandy to bring it back is, he needs to know that he has a community of people looking out for him. Mm-hmm. He needs a plan because he can't do it himself. Mm-hmm. If he was going to do it himself, he would have already done it.
Yeah.
So he needs plan, he needs accountability, and he needs to like small milestones. Hey, like, and they can't be almost, you know, like you could say physical kind of things I can see in the mirror, being like, all right, well, you know what? Like we're going to put together, you know, some strength stuff. There's going to be some conditioning standards. And one of the big things for him is mobility. Mm-hmm. You know, when I rolled with him, the one thing is he's very stiff, you know, and especially in those like interesting end ranges. So, and he lacks rotation, you know, he's very stiff. You know, one of the hallmarks I've observed in jiu-jitsu is, you know, hip mobility, both adduction and adduction and abduction, but then also transverse rotation in that trunk, especially when you're in abduction. It's pretty interesting. So
dissociating the hip, like
from separating the upper body from the lower body.
Yeah. So like, for instance, you know, this might be too much inside baseball, but like Shanji's classic guard, where he talks about like getting to your side and he has this high knee shield in, your hips are one way, but then your shoulders are framing in a different way. So yeah, that is the ultimate like dissociation, I think, you know, that's outside of maybe field sports that you could see.
Yeah. But the, if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, whenever we talk about athleticism, one of the hallmarks of athleticism, and you know, this blueprint for athleticism for power athlete is the ability to separate the upper body from the lower body.
Yeah,
you know, you think about the you know, receiver running down and basically rotating his body back to catch the football while he's in full stride, like offensive linemen sitting back and rotating. I mean, that ability to separate the upper body from the lower body is one of like what we know is athleticism. Yeah. So, I mean, in jiu-jitsu, it would be no different.
Yeah,
you know, and that's it's funny, the when Shanji teaches and he teaches things like that and he does it, he's always like, oh, that looks good. It looks easy. And I'm like, yeah, because we've been doing this training. And then I watch him work with other people who have never really been in that situation and it's more difficult to teach. Mm-hmm. So I think everything kind of goes back to this model of like, you know, if you foster and develop athleticism, it should be able to port over to anything.
Yeah.
But I think for Mandy, what we do is we put a game plan together, you know, hey, you know, it could be a challenge. So, hey, we're going to do this with you, you know, a little bit of group suffering. I found that for a lot of these things that, it's, food, money, and shame are powerful drivers for men. So like, hey, we're going to do, you know, this is gonna be a 12 week challenge. At the end of it, the loser has to buy dinner. We're all going to kick in $100 and, we're going to make fun of you the whole, if you lose.
Yeah.
And if you drop out, we're going to fucking make it even worse. So we found years ago that food, money, and shame were like the three main drivers that covered the whole fucking spectrum, which is what we did for 22 Jack Street. It was like money, food, and shame, and probably just do something like that. But I think for him, there's probably some mobility limitations that you got to really address. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe passive range of motion stretching, like, oh, you should go do yoga. I don't think that works at all. I think everything with jiu-jitsu is very active range of motion. So you have to basically stretch with weight on your back. You have to lift weights and you have to be able to do it with full range of motion.
You brought up carving out 2 hours of your day. And I think that's probably where people are missing, because all the responsibilities of their day probably stack up. And at the end of the day, the last thing they want to do is make the 7 o'clock drive to the gym to, because they already fed the kids, and now they got to go drive to the gym and get on the bike to do their aerobic work or do their lift.
You can always just go walk around the neighborhood.
You can go walk around the neighborhood. I just think the most important concept, like you said, is those 2 hours is just chop wood and carry water every day. And I just, I was thinking back on my martial arts journey and all that kind of stuff. And, I think during COVID people asked me like, hey, why do you still train? Everything is shut down. I was like, I don't, you know, honestly, I just don't know. I just know that every day since I was like 13 years old at 5 o'clock, I would have to train for 2 hours because of wrestling practice and then judo practice.
Yeah.
And then I'd go home and every day I do this. So even when my parents put me in like karate when I was younger, I just knew that every day I had to go to the dojo, and I didn't even have a goal, but I just knew that I had to go to the dojo and, you know, chop wood, carry water every single day. And now like, even when things are hard or I get an injury, I just know that that still needs to happen in whatever capacity.
So that's an interesting point. I've always had this theory that discipline, like there's like discipline waivers, right? But habits are, will trump discipline any day.
Right.
Like if your habit is that every day you go at five and that's who you are, then like, is it really discipline or is it just habit? Like
it's just habit.
Yeah, it's just habits.
Yeah.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
You know, like one of the shittier things, but it's actually good for me because it's actually investment, is getting in the car and driving to HQ because it's such a hike.
Yeah.
You know, but I know that like going there, like, so in my head, it allows me to kind of like have time. Whereas I almost wonder, when I asked Andy Stump how he got so good at jujitsu so quick, he's like, I lived like 2 minute walk from jujitsu. So I'd like look at the clock and be like, oh, there's a class. And he'd just like pick up his gi and go to class. Yeah. And then he'd get done and he'd go home and he'd be like, oh, I got nothing to do. I'll just go to class again. And so it was so close for him that he ended up like training 6 days a week and sometimes twice a day. And his jits was, you know, as we know, the more you can expose yourself to it, but his kids are grown. You know, I don't think he was married at the time. So, I mean, he had a lot of free time on his hands and he was able to really immerse himself into it. But that's also his kind of deal where he like gets on a track. Like when he wanted to be a pilot, he flew every day. If he wanted to skydive, he skydived every day. Like he's very good about like obsessing about something to mastery.
But jumping on a bike and doing 20 to 30 minutes of aerobic work is such an easy thing to do, but also so easy not to do.
Well, yeah. You know, we had Joel Jameson on the podcast, you know, talking about, you know, train Morpheus and really just, you know, being able to train in different recovery zones. And actually his information was really valuable when I started working with you guys, because I had this theory that the jiu-jitsu was so efficient that you guys were never training in the upper registers in those upper heart rate zones. And then that's when we wore the train with Morpheus and like the guys were like zone two the entire time. They never got over 150 beats in the training room. And I'm like, well, shit, like this is completely different because I'm in there redlining it.
Yeah.
And then just watching Shanji, like how efficient he is, like his heart rate never gets too high.
Yeah.
So that's why I realized, I was like, well, if we need to be complete, we need to train in these upper registers and these upper heart rates. So that's when we started adding like, you know, the superhuman protocol and a lot of the, you know, kettlebell swings and just a lot of task specific tension to try to get the heart rates up.
And build a vasculature as mighty as the Rio Negro.
I like it. That's a good one. Yeah. No, I think for Mandy, he's taken the first step, which is community and self-realization.
Yep.
Right. He's put himself into a community. He has self-realization because now he's in a situation where his physical being is preventing his performance from increasing. So now what he needs to do is he needs to morph the physical being into something that allows him to be able to progress with his jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, whether it's lifting weights, getting in shape, I mean, all of these things. And if that's what he wants to do, but I think it really goes back to like, okay, like when did this start? Where did you all of a sudden like start to lose this fight? And then talk to him a little bit about what I was telling you about my dad, where, you know, I asked my dad the secret to being married for 55 years. And he said, never give in, never give up. Women will steamroll you. They'll bulldoze you. They're like the ocean. They never stop. They're relentless. So you have to fight every single moment to never lose your manhood and never acquiesce. And I was like, holy shit, like dad. And he's like, yeah, that's why my dad battled my mom. And he's like, women are relentless. If you give in once, that's it. Never give up. Never give in. Fight every single day with them. And I was like, I asked him like, dad, like that can't work. He's like, it's good. One of two things are going to happen. You're either going to be married for 55 years or your wife's going to divorce you. And it's not because you were a bitch. it worked for my dad. And then, it's funny cause, you know, my dad passed away 7 years ago and my mom is still like, oh man, I miss your father so much. I'm like, you guys fought all the time. Yeah. She's like, it was never boring. And, like my dad was smart. He was funny. Like, and I think what happens is, that story that, that comic told about Adam and Eve and, you know,
Bill Hicks,
right? Yeah. Like, we'll always be happy. We'll live in paradise. We'll have food. And he's like,
all of our dreams will come true. Eve.
Yeah. We'll live forever. She's like, no, it's not enough.
It's just not enough, is it?
Yeah. So what you have to do is regardless what you do, you have to battle. You have to be able to stay. But, you know, life is like that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, you think about the same thing in terms of like eating and training. Like I was watching that video from 10 years ago and I'm like, shit, man, like I know exactly what I was doing. I like the physical performance and you have to be able to like extend that for time. There's also this feeling that as you train, like you can't do, you know, can you still make strength gains? Yeah, 100% you can. Mm. You can continue to get stronger and be your strongest self as you continue to age. You know, I think that the difference between, you know, I hear all the, oh, I turned 40 and the wheels fell off. No, it didn't. What happened was you didn't do the things in your 30s to prepare yourself for your 40s. And then I hear, oh, I turned 50 and the wheels fell off. Well, you gave up somewhere in your 40s and you stopped doing the things that you did in your 30s and your 40s to get to your 50s.
Ode Haugen didn't start strongman until I think late into his 30s or early 40s. And he was still a professional strongman.
Dude, at 52. Fred Hatfield, you know,
Dr. Squat,
rest in peace. Who we did Power Athlete Radio with, he squatted, you know, what was 1,000+ when he was in his 40s.
Yeah.
You know, so there is definitely, if you continue to train and try and be smart, but one of the things I've observed, especially when you start kind of getting up a little bit, or, you know, in your 30 or your 40s and even in your 50s, is fatigue is a motherfucker. And being able to understand in the training room and more importantly, you know, under the barbell, like what fatigue is and when it hits. And so you think about, like, let's say, for example, I'm going to squat X amount of reps or sets, whatever it looks like. And you get into this and you're hitting your warm up, you're feeding your way up, you're on your feeder sets, and you get to, like, you know, somewhere in those upper kind of ones. And realizing, I saw this happen to you yesterday, hey, that first one looked pretty good. And I could see the spark in your mind, I'm going to do this for X amount of reps.
Yeah.
And then number two kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
Was it better if you had just done the one and finished, or was the second rep the driver?
Right.
If you think about hypertrophy, if you think about like hypertrophy, especially with like, you know, mechanical tension and failure,
training to failure.
I always look for like bar speed to slow. Mm-hmm. If all of a sudden, like, you know, the first one was good, let's take a second. And then all of a sudden that second rep, the bar speed all of a sudden slows and you start to grind and you get a little bit of shake. That was the rep right there. It was perfect. That's why I cut you that one. I was like, that's it. Put it away. I watched Philippe on the other hand, fucking die on his rep and then try a second one and die a second time. But if you notice, there was no shake. Like there was like no Bard speed. He just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And, but you know, he's also 25 years old.
Yeah.
So the difference between, you know, working to failure as a 25-year-old and working to failure, say a 30-year-old or a 40-year-old, you know, is a little bit different. So being able to understand that fatigue and then also being able to pair up the movements, like we did, you know, a few different bilateral hinging movements. We pulled an RDL. Mm. We used the glued ham machine, which was good after the RDLs to be able to go over there and load that heavy and then to go over and be able to squat on the transformer bar. Yeah. So all kind of similar movement patterns, but done within different planes of motion. You know, one, obviously, you know, we're hinging. So you're, you know, doing a concentric to an eccentric. Then on the glued ham machine, now we're sitting in that, you know, kind of prone position and then going over to squat. I mean, just different movement patterns. I think Tom Newman said, you know, 3 degrees is a different movement.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of hits the idea of like, when did I do enough? Because I think some of these older trainees, right, remember the feeling of being completely exhausted after football practice or after wrestling practice or whatever it was. And they like miss that feeling. But it may not necessarily be the feeling that serves them best towards their goals.
So, dude, when you said that, I remembered I was in college and my offensive line coach, Tom Cable, who is a great offensive line coach, complete fucking prick. Our head coach got mad at us for fighting in practice, right? Something happened. I got into a fight and he would hand out punishments like insane shit, like 1,000 yards of up downs, which means that you have to run every 10 yards, you have to drop down and do basically an up down. And you end up having to do 10 football fields for 1,000 yards of up down.
Oh, jeez.
So he would throw shit out like that, like just like zero, like, hey, you know, I'm going to give you 100 yards of up downs, which would just be 20 up downs while you run 100 yards. But like he would fucking throw out like 300, 500, 800 yards. And I think he fucking threw me out like 500. And I had to do them at the end of practice. So imagine going full grinder, end of practice. I end up doing like 500 yards of up downs. And as I'm walking the kickers, like I'm dragging myself off the field. The kickers were kicking kickoffs. And as I'm walking, one of the balls hits me and fell down. I totally just went down. Like literally, it hit me in the shoulder and I just buckled and the ball went down and they like came down. They're like, you okay? I'm like, I'm so tired. And the guy's like, you fell down off of a ball hitting you. I'm like, that's how tired I am. And these poor guys are out there watching me do this and they kicked me and hit me. And I remember thinking that was the moment in my life where I was the most tired.
Yeah.
Like they're like, when you were saying football practice, like we played a lot of, like there was a lot of grinders, a lot of hard practices, like a lot of physical exertion, but I always like ran off the field. That was the only time I was walking and I was so tired that the ball hit me and I fell down.
Yeah. Cause you know, I get belted by somebody. Yeah. I think when it comes to training to failure, especially when you're older or like me, I'm making this transition from spring chicken to like, hey, chicken dinner, right? It's
well,
like,
well, this is a good transition to one of my questions.
Yeah.
And I think this is actually an excellent transition. Mm-hmm. Is training to failure essential or is it overrated? So like, let's look at this definition, right? Training to failure means doing reps until you literally cannot complete another rep with good form. Mm-hmm. But there's also two classifications. There's technical failure where you can't do another rep with good form. Or there's absolute failure where you no longer can physically move the weight anymore. Mm-hmm. I tend to err on the side of technical failure. Like for example, we were deadlifting yesterday and as long as I can pull the weight, we're doing RDLs, as long as I can pull the weight and the technique is good, I'll keep going. The minute that my technique breaks down and I cannot lift the weight with good, you know, proper execution, that's good for me. Mm. Watching Philippe, I watch his upper back break and he still finished the lift. If my upper back broke like that, I would like drop the weight, I'd reset and I'd try it again. Mm-hmm. I would not power through it. So one of the big things that was impactful to me many years ago was watching Dorian Yates' Blood and Guts video from his training. And the one thing that was, I mean, the intensity was insane, but the one thing that I took away from that was his technique and his perfect execution. He was able to work to failure and like he worked into that mechanical failure, full exhaustion, but I never really saw the reps change. Like everyone was very focused and perfect. And so when I think about training to failure, I think about that technical failure much more so than, you know, watching like a Sam Sulik video where he physically no longer do it. And he's kind of cheating and doing like these little quarter half reps working to the point where he can't really do it.
Well, he only really does that. And I think people need a frame of reference is he only really does that when he's on a machine that doesn't challenge stability, sure. Right? Like a barbell challenges stability with a squat and the deadlift because you are the stability. So yeah. you can't possibly provide stability and then maximum muscular.
Well,
output,
the research is pretty conclusive that if you can remove stability from the movement, hypertrophy is greater because you don't have to focus on stabilizing and you can work to failure.
Surely.
But I think I saw one where he was doing like, I think it was some form of curls and he got to the point where he just physically could no longer lift it.
Chest supported rows of like six plates on each side.
Yeah. Just little half ones.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like he's not on there telling people, hey, train like me.
Yeah.
He's just showing like, hey, this is what I did. And just
clip the microphone at the top of the hat. Yeah. And he's like 20 show something. You what I'm doing.
And he's having a good time. Yeah. He legitimately is having fun. So like, who am I to say anything different? But there is a lot of claims. I mean, like so there's kind of two camps, right? Mm. There's the team failure, which is funny, where like, you know, if you're training to failure, the claim is that you're getting max motor unit recruitment, and this is vital for hypertrophy. Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting is, you know, then on the other side of the camp, there's a kind of the reps in reserve. Mm-hmm. I think what people forget is this stuff is dictated on percentage of 1RM, right? If you're lifting a heavy weight and, you know, let's say failure is 5 reps and you get 4, you're going to get 99% of the benefit because the margin of error is so much bigger, right, with heavier weights. Now, if like, let's say you're lifting a really lightweight and 30 reps is the driver and you get to 27, the margin of error is very small and you're not going to get nearly the same effect. So the thing I like about the heavyweights is, and we do a lot of rep maxes in Power Athlete, when people are like, hey, you know, we were going to do, you know, a heavy 5, for example, and I only got 4. I'm like, perfect. I would rather know what your 4.5 is, right? And opposed from your 7RM. Well, and then I get people all the time, they're like, hey, I know we were supposed to squat a heavy set of 5, but I ended up getting 8 reps with that weight. Great. All right. Well, put some more weight on and let's do it again.
Let's try to get down to five.
Yeah. Let's try to get down to 5. So if you got all, you know, in the tank, but like that last rep should look like the last rep. If like the first rep and the 5th rep look the same, then you're not pushing to the boundary. Like that last rep, like you should be able to watch it where you're like, ooh, you know, like we were saying on my final rep on the squat where all of a sudden I came up and I got a little bit of shake and I had to like drive through it. I knew that was my final rep.
Yeah.
Could I have taken another one? Yeah, but it would have been ugly.
I call it the one. That was the one set. You know, so all the other sets, they just helped me prepare for that one set.
Yeah. Dude, that's been my entire thing. So when I was a young dipshit kid who wanted to be big, I remember my training partner, Tasso Papadakis, we ended up having this Dorian Yates magazine. Right. It was Flex magazine, right? And it was the Road to Olympia back routine and shit. And it was like one set to failure.
Yeah.
Right. What they didn't write about is that he probably had 4, 5, 6, 7 warm-up sets getting up to that kind of that pyramiding up to that one. Yeah. I'm like, this guy's just one set to failure. And then we see the video and he's doing bent rows with like 500 pounds. And at this time there was no YouTube. We didn't see any videos. So we just see him doing bent rows with like, you know, 495 pounds. And it says one set to failure. And I'm like, does he just load 500 pounds on that and row it as many times?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
He did 135. He did 225, 315, 405. I mean, he had a bunch of warm-up sets to get ready for this. So he was priming the pump. And I didn't figure that out until much later in life after we watched Blood and Guts. And I was like, oh, this makes so much sense.
Yeah.
I mean, but he figured out what I think so many people have not wanted to embrace is the fact that, you know, if you want to put on muscle, you have to force the adaptation. And unfortunately, there's no nice, easy way, comfortable way to force adaptation.
I would say with leaving reps in reserve probably helps more when you're doing compound lifts on your own. Mm-hmm. You know, it keeps you safe and also allows you to keep coming back to the gym that week. And I think a lot of people want to go to the gym more often because it's their holy place, right? Mm-hmm. They just want to go there. But then when you train to failure, unless you're under the assistance of some pharmaceuticals, it's really difficult to show up every day and go to failure every single day.
No, that's why you have to be smart with your training. You have to give adequate rest. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm, you know, like I always, like in all the programs, even my own training, I look at how many sets to failure mm-hmm. over the course of the week. And one of the things that I'm constantly trying to manage is fatigue. Mm-hmm. You know, like fatigue is by far our, you know, biggest enemy in terms of like, you know, creating more hypertrophy and, you know, strength. If you're training to the point into fatigue where you're, you know, you're knocking on the door of fatigue, you hit it and then you train into fatigue.
Yeah.
The effects are far reaching in terms of negative. But if you can train right up into that, like, you know, simmer, not boil, where like I'm right there, you hit that rep, you're good and let's move on. Like, so being able to know that comes with age, but like really in terms of managing fatigue and especially as athletes get older, you know, and then they're like, well, how do I train more? Well, you're going to have to do more zone 2 stuff. You're going to have to do more recovery work. As Joel Jameson said, that pool is extremely deep and we've never found the bottom.
And you got to be a little bit more intentional with what you're doing. Like, what are we training for?
Yeah.
You know, it was funny because, I appreciate Andrew Huberman's content and what he does for people and exposing them to like high level research, mm-hmm. even though sometimes it's an obvious conclusion, like go outside more, but he did a session with the Altus founder. I forget the coach's name, but he's an excellent running coach.
Oh,
and he put him through a session of just learning how to get a basic stride and skips.
You sent me this.
I sent it to you.
He just basically was heel striking.
Heel striking a little bit, and then he looked really stiff up top. But then, you know, to his credit, he tried something that's outside of his wheelhouse. Right.
He's pretty jacked.
But that's the thing is like for somebody that just wants to train with weights and maybe put on muscle mass, then that is the way to go is to show up to the gym, train to failure once or twice a week, recover and then return. But if you want to move it with athleticism, you do need to practice athleticism.
Yeah.
And also your training needs to.
Well, that's why we use a lot of compensatory acceleration.
Right.
You know, the idea that as mechanical advantage increases, so does speed. Mm-hmm. To quote Dr. Fred Hatfield, you get to activate those white muscle fibers that are very difficult to activate anywhere other than a true max effort attempt. You know, I had Dr. Ben Skutnik on the podcast. And I talked about one of the observations I made in the NFL was I could tell you within a standard deviation of nil, who lifted heavy weights and who didn't just by their physical structure. Mm-hmm. I watch guys go in the weight room and never put more than 315 on a back squat, and never put more than 225 on a bench. And they would just be like, oh, 8 to 10 reps. And they would do kind of a light, medium, moderate deal. Mm-hmm. And I could physically look at those guys and be like, oh, well, yeah, he looks like he does that. And then you see other guys that lifted heavy weights and you'd see him with their shirt off, or you'd see him, you know, at other places. And they just, there was a remarkably different look of people that trained over 85% opposed to the, that didn't.
I always loved the look of the, because we both grew up in the South Bay and West Los Angeles, but you remember like the Olympic weightlifters of the West Side, just in general, the Valley, South Bay, and whatever. They would have this interesting look, like all traps, tiny arms, just like a nondescript torso, and then the giant quads.
The Sean Waxman look?
Everything in the... Everything in the posterior is just enormous. And then the front, they're just like, man, I don't bench press. I don't bench press. I just throw 400 pounds over my head. Sean, listen, man, when you had Sean on the podcast, and it flashed me back all the good times with him. He's a great coach. He's definitely one of the coaches I can for sure say is dedicated to the process of developing athletes. To which he has very few equal. So he's in rare air. And anyway, I didn't get a chance to shout him out before on the podcast. So he made me cry with his words. So I'm a sensitive guy. And
you are, dude. You're like a big onion. You got lots of layers, like a big ogre. one of the things that comes up constantly with a training to failure is the context of experience versus beginners, right? So there is a definite difference between like a beginner following something with bedrock,
sure,
which, you know, you're kind of overreaching, basically following that linear progression, versus the advanced lifter, you know, where you have to be much more strategic in what you're doing. So, I mean, the more reps you have under the bar, the more advanced you are, the more strategic you have to think. You know, that's why, you know, with bedrock, for example, we can use a, you know, a weekly program that just repeats, and, you know, we still do, you know, 6 week cycles, but it's a basic linear progression. Mm-hmm. Whereas you get into the other programs and they have to be much more advanced because we don't have that, you know, unadapted nervous system, the internal and intramuscular coordination and all the things we take advantage of in those early days. So I think you know, especially when it talks about that, training to failure and what you need to do, how many sets, how many reps. I think one of the lenses you have to look through is like, what's my level of exposure? Am I a beginner? Am I intermediate or advanced lifter? So I think what happens a lot of times, especially for some older athletes, like let's say Mandy, we'll use an example, 56. So he's older in age, but is he a advanced lifter? Is he a beginning lifter? Mm-hmm. Right. He probably doesn't have a ton of time under the barbell, or he's been away from the barbell for so long that he is kind of a beginner in a lot of ways.
So we're going to reintroduce him.
So there is a program to reintroduce him that might be a basic linear progression. You know, it could be just a few basic movements that you end up doing and, you know, setting a weight. Every week he comes in, you add a few pounds to the bar to be able to kind of build up proficiency and get to the point where it's heavy enough. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, there's a common misconception of like age. Oh, he's 56, so he's got to be advanced. I've met 56-year-old beginners, right? I've met 22-year-old advanced athletes. So being able to kind of understand that, I think one of the hard parts of balancing is like, okay, he's got a lot of time away from the barbell, so he kind of fits within that beginner model, but he also is older, so we have to take advantage and or actually be very cognizant of his recovery or lack thereof. So that's where I go back to this like recovery deep zone two pool of building a large aerobic base so that he can be more efficient in his recovery from session to session. So for him, it might be start at 2 days a week under the barbell and, you know, maybe 4 or 5 days. And we could use something like Train Like Morpheus to try to figure out what his recovery work is. And as those metrics start improving and we put some tests in, like, for example, you know, we do maybe a once a week upper register thing on the bike with some interval sprints.
Yeah.
As those start to become better and him handling it better and, you know, not having as much issue. And what I love about the bike is it's all concentric. Yeah. So there's no eccentric load. So we can really push and get a true effort. Maybe all of a sudden he gets to the point where 2 days a week and he basically creates a large aerobic base. We're kind of pushing on the conditioning side and now he can add a third day.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we're looking at like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday where he's going to have, you know, 24, 72 hours in between lifts, depending on what the split looks like. And now we can start kind of like getting into this. I think the 2 day a week to me is real good. Like if you're already in shape, like 2 days a week is just enough to keep everything. Yeah. Like going in the right direction, 3 days, 4 days, especially if you're trying to drive high, drive adaptation, increase hypertrophy, I think is a mandatory. Mm-hmm. And then you just gotta be a little bit smarter. So I think there's just an interesting point of beginner at the barbell needs more adaptation, but he also has to balance recovery. And that's going to be based on his, aerobic fitness and really what we can get out of him. Mm-hmm. And then we just have to be smart. You know, it could be things like pushing the sled, which doesn't have eccentric load. One of the things that, ends up being an issue with kettlebells is the thickness in the handle ends up ramping up heart rate. So that's another thing. That's why kettlebell swings are so awful, especially heavy ones, because that squeezing effect. And I ended up finding out that the hard way many years ago. I got asked to train a client that had some issues with his heart. We went to do kettlebell swings and all of a sudden he shows me his watch and he's 240 in AFib. And I'm doing 220 minus his age. I'm oh shit. And when I did a little bit of research, we found that thicker handle, the squeezing effect, ends up causing some of the issues in the heart. So just being very cognizant of that.
Right, because of the nerve innervation.
Yeah.
With increased demand on the grip.
But I love the kettlebell swing for the fact that there's task-specific tension. Mm-hmm. And we're able to, be able to load the trunk. And
specifically the task of you chucking a white belt across the room, right? You just grab a white belt by the belt, and instead of taking his back, you just chuck him all the way into the wall.
That's right? What I like to do.
Yeah. You're a changed man now, John.
No,
I will never forget that you told me. You're like, yeah, I went to show. This is at the very beginning. I'm like, yeah, Shanji's new class is great. Just grabbed this one dude and chucked him into the wall. And I was like, yeah, John sometimes speaks in hyperbole to make us laugh, maybe. And then I go talk to Jesse on Fire. And he's like, no, he chucked a white belt into the wall. I'm like, from where? He's like, yeah, from over here into the wall. And he's like, over his head. It was impressive. I'll never forget it.
So now great. I'm
white belt John was amazing.
I play guard. I'm a guard player now, to the point where when I was rolling with Shrek, I was in top position and I realized that this wasn't benefiting anybody.
Yeah.
So I basically rolled over and then Shanji got mad at me for basically conceding having position. Him sweep me. And I was like, he didn't sweep me. I just rolled over because I wanted to play bottom. And Shanji was look at me. I'm like, I am not learning anything playing on top. I need to learn to play on the bottom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If all I do is battle dudes and stay on top, it doesn't help me. I want to learn to play off of the bottom and kind of get some of these submissions.
Inside your mind is just this steady mantra of calma. Calma, John.
So what I want to do is record Shanji saying it and then make that my ringer.
Calma. Every time he calls you.
Yeah. No, just anytime my phone rings, it's calma, calma. And maybe every 60 minutes, it just chirps and goes, calma, calma. So for those of you guys who don't know, Shanji Hibero, our coach.
Hibero.
His favorite term or his favorite phrase for me when we're doing jits or whatever it is and he's coaching is, comma, comma, which just means that I'm going too hard. I just need to relax a little bit.
Yeah, relax a little bit.
Thanks, dude. Hey, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's KO-FI.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
Life in D helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.